You are listening to the IFH Podcast Network. For more amazing filmmaking and screenwriting podcasts, just go to ifhpodcastnetwork.com.
Welcome to the Indie Film Hustle Podcast, episode number 413. The most powerful weapon on earth is the human soul on fire. Anonymous.
Broadcasting from the back alley in Hollywood, it's the Indie Film Hustle Podcast, where we show you how to survive and thrive as an indie filmmaker in the jungles of the film biz. And here's your host, Alex Ferrari.
Welcome, welcome to another episode of the Indie Film Hustle Podcast. I am your humble host, Alex Ferrari. Today's show is sponsored by Rise of the Filmtrepreneur, how to turn your independent film into a profitable business. It's harder today than ever before for independent filmmakers to make money with their films, from predatory film distributors ripping them off to huckster film aggregators who prey upon them. The odds are stacked against the indie filmmaker. The old distribution model of making money with your film is broken, and there needs to be a change. The future of independent filmmaking is the entrepreneurial filmmaker or the filmtrepreneur. In Rise of the Filmtrepreneur, I break down how to actually make money with your film projects and show you how to turn your indie film into a profitable business. With case studies examining successes and failures, this book shows you the step-by-step method to turn your passion into a profitable career. If you're making a feature film, series, or any other kind of video content, the Filmtrepreneur method will set you up for success. The book is available in paperback, ebook, and of course, audiobook. If you want to order it, just head over to www.filmbizbook.com. That's filmbizbook.com. Before I get started today, guys, I want to warn everybody listening that there will be some very coarse language in this episode. So if you are listening with little ones around, be warned that this is going to be one of those raw episodes of the Indie Film Hustle Podcast. Well, guys, today, this show is, man, I don't even know how to say it. I am extremely pissed off and extremely upset for having to do a podcast like this. Today on the show, I have filmmaker Michael Daniel. And his film, Get Gone, was licensed to a film distributor in the UK called Phoenix Worldwide Entertainment. And they offered him a $100,000 MG or minimum guarantee up front. Now, Michael did everything in his power to get everything done and all the deliverables delivered according to the agreement, and he did that. He even sold his truck to get those deliverables done. And that cost him anywhere about $15,000, $14,000, $15,000, something along those lines to get the deliverables done for his film. And he was supposed to get the money, the $100,000, right away. It has been a year and a half, and they're still playing around with not paying Michael. Now, this story in itself is not as unique as I wish it would be. I hear stories like this all the time. Many of us have heard stories of distributors not living up to their agreements. But the thing that adds a little bit extra salt on this wound is that Michael is fighting stage 4 cancer. He has terminal cancer, and he is fighting for his life. And he told me that this distributor is literally waiting for him to die so he doesn't have to pay him. I mean, I thought I've heard everything in regards to predatory distributors. I've seen the lowest bottom of the barrel kind of situation, but this takes the cake. This is at a whole other level of evil. Now, I saw this video, this very passionate video that Michael posted in our Facebook group, How to Protect Yourself from Predatory Film Distributors / Aggregators, and he posted this video there, and I was blown away. He was literally telling a story about how he's fighting stage 4 colon cancer, and he's stressed out, and he's lost friends, and he's lost family, and you know he's almost homeless. He sold his car. All this whole story, while these guys, Phoenix Worldwide Entertainment, according to him, have done everything in their power to not pay him, and Michael had proof, emails, contracts, FedEx receipts, everything. And we put all of that information in an article that he wrote because I wanted him to tell his story in his own words at the show notes at indiefilmhustle.com/413. And you could read that there and also see the original video along with other videos in regards to his journey fighting cancer and his journey making his film. Now, after I heard his story, I started to do some research on Phoenix Worldwide Entertainment. And what I found was not only disturbing, but I was just overwhelmed at the just immense amount of fraud cases and impropriety and lawsuits that this man and these companies that he runs has had over the years. And I have links to all of the research that I found at the show notes. But I'll give you just the cliff notes of what I discovered. He was accused of raising money for a film called Mary, Mother of Christ, using the name of Oscar-winning producer and director Mel Gibson. Mr. Gibson had never heard of the project. He also did the same thing with a film called Henry V, where he supposedly had starring Tom Hardy, Albert Finney, William H. Macy, Sacha Baron Cohen, Michael Caine, Gerard Depardieu, and Ray Winston attached to the projects as well. And when the actors' agents were contacted, they said they had never heard of the project and had nothing to do with it. And then once again, through another company that he co-founded called Stealth Media Group, which is a finance and international sales company, he was accused of doing the same thing again using John Travolta's name for an animated film called Gummy Bears. Again, Mr. Travolta, when reached, knew nothing of the project and had no involvement in the film. And the list goes on and on the amount of scandals and accusations against Mr. Cohen and his companies. Guys, I have to say something here. This needs to stop. This kind of absolute crap that keeps happening in our business needs to stop. The system is broken. If predatory film distributors can continue to get away with screwing film producers and filmmakers again and again and again, the system is broken and needs to be changed. And the only weapon that we as filmmakers have against these predatory distributors is to shine a light on when and where they do this crap. They work in the shadows. All of these deals are done in dark alleys back where somewhere, and no one ever hears about it because filmmakers are afraid to come forward or don't want to talk about it or just think that they're just a small little filmmaker and can't possibly take on a big, powerful, predatory distributor. I was literally on the phone in a consulting session with a filmmaker yesterday where he told me his story about how a predatory distributor had screwed him over. And when he confronted the distributor about it, the distributor said, and I quote, "I'll see you in the court of who gives a fuck." Excuse my language, but that is a direct quote. The distributor in question was in the UK and the filmmaker was in the US. The distributor knew that the chances of the filmmaker taking him to court in another country were slim to none. And the filmmaker's lawyer advised him to let it go because the cost would be too much to take him to court. And the distributor knew this. This crap needs to stop. That's why I wanted to give Michael a voice. I wanted to give him a platform so he could share his story with thousands and tens of thousands of filmmakers that listen to this podcast and watch my videos and read my blog posts. For so long, Michael felt like he was alone, that nobody would help him. And I know that's how a lot of filmmakers feel in this world. You bust your ass trying to get your movie made. You sacrifice, you scrape and claw your way to the finish line to get your movie made. And then at the end, some predatory bastard comes in and steals your movie from you. and doesn't pay you and laughs in your face. This needs to stop. I personally want to thank Michael for coming forward and sharing his story with the tribe. We'll be right back after a word from our sponsor. And now, back to the show. It takes a brave soul to do what he is doing. He is not only fighting cancer, he's not only fighting for his life, but he's also fighting to get his film back and to receive the money that he is legally owed. This episode is brutal and painful to listen to. Both Michael and I believe that this episode will help countless filmmakers around the world. Without any further ado, here is my conversation with Michael Daniel. I'd like to welcome to the show Michael Daniel, man. Thank you for coming on the show, Michael.
Hey, thank you, Alex, for having me.
I wish it was under better circumstances, but I saw this very passionate video that you posted up on YouTube telling the story of how your experience with a specific distributor who we'll be talking about soon and how you were stating that they have taken advantage of you and not lived up to their agreements. And I hear those stories on a daily basis. I get emails on a daily basis about those things, as sad as and terrifying, as horrible as that stuff is. I get it all the time. And I try to help as much as I can. And obviously through what I do at Indie Film Hustle and everything I do on a daily basis, I'm trying to get the education and the information out for people not to get screwed. But yours was even, you had something that I had not heard before. You are struggling with cancer currently. And when I heard that a distributor was doing something to someone was essentially dying or fighting for their life and still doing this, I said, I can't sit back and not allow you to come on the show and spread the word about what has happened to you. And hopefully that can help other people. So before we go down this road, how did you start in the business? Because I think that's important for people to understand.
Okay, honestly, the very first script I wrote was involved with Project Greenlight. You remember back the Matt Damon, Ben Affleck days back in the day?
That would be, I was in season two, sir. I was in the opening sequence of season two, sir.
I was at the Park City party and the one of the LA parties, the bowling alley. So back then. So yeah, my first script was a comedy called Misinformation. I wrote it in Word like an idiot. So I had to change everything. Cuts. I didn't know what I was doing. So anyway, that was the start. So I read it. They're like, this is really funny, blah, blah, blah. Then I started just writing other stuff. And then I Trigger Street, remember that? So TriggerStreet.com, I started putting scripts up there. And then I started getting the top three. And then I got a couple of screenplay of the months. Then I won something. Then they had me come on and do like an interview about it. And the first 10 pages. Then I'm not really a big contest enterer, but I had a script that I was really passionate about because I care a lot about civil rights and people being treated like human beings. And it's a film called Circle in the Water. And it's basically a story that starts the day Hitler's born and it ends the day Obama's elected. But it follows this black family in Stone Mountain, Georgia, trying to build a dairy and fighting racism in the South. And then they happen to be at like all these different places. Anyway, so I wrote that, entered a Nickel Fellowship with that script. I came in the semifinals with that one.
Nice.
And I've been a quarterfinals three times in Nickels and a semifinals once. That got me introduced to my buddy John Orland because I couldn't afford to go to Inktip Pitch Fest, so I volunteered. And I got meetings because I volunteered. And at the cocktail party, I just shot the shit with people, and people said, oh, yeah, cool, yeah, let's talk. Then I got hired to write two scripts, all ideas I had from him, you know, and it built and built. And I started making short films, one or two short films. And then I was like, you know what, I want to make this, but I've never had money. I've never had anybody believe in me, family, you know, never. I got a lot of friends now who believe in me and who really see what I'm doing. But I had to go through a lot to get to this point. And my buddy Joseph Shelley, who's the executive producer, he and I paid for everything. Him mostly. He, you know, they screwed him out of like $9,000 or more, you know. So he knew me for a long time. He knew I hiked the Pacific Crest Trail. He knew I made documentaries hiking the Appalachian Trail. I walked across America and did a documentary. He knew all this. He knew if I set out to do something, I would complete it. And he's like, hey, man, I just sold this property up in Oregon. I've got like an extra $80,000-$90,000 I can throw in if you've got a story, if you want to write a script. So I popped out a script, moved up there, got it all together, you know, and that's how I finally got to the feature. So it was like, you know, like most filmmakers, it's not giving up. And it took me from Project Greenlight to now to get that movie, to get a real movie made. Mm-hmm. I worked with Christopher Coppola on a few projects, and I, you know, wrote for him a couple of times. And other people I met, oddly enough, either through On the Lot or Project Greenlight. So, you know, internet's been great. So that got me to get gone. See, dedication, man. Mm-hmm. I get the movie on my arm. So yeah, that's about, you know, that's the condensed version. There's a whole lot more stuff.
Oh, I'm sure. I'm sure. Yeah, that's definitely the condensed version. Well, then tell me, so tell me about your film and how it got made and how what the struggles were just to get this thing, to get the thing to where you have it. And again, we could do a condensed version.
Sure. I'll do it. You can say, hey, that's enough if I go too long. All right. So like I said, I moved to the town, got to know all the people who lived in a specific town, Cascade Locks, Oregon. And I started looking for locations and stuff, trying to make this work, you know, and I wanted to get all the sorry, I just cat meowing. Sorry.
No, it's okay. No, you can – cat meows is okay. No worries.
Okay, cool. All right, so Cascade Locks, Oregon, blah, blah, blah. Got to meet all the locals, found all the locations. I cast it. I did a local casting at the Best Western there in Cascade for Oregon folks from Portland to come in. Met a lot of great people, hired a lot of great people right there. Was looking for a DP. I told him, dude, I was like, dude, at the start of this, we only had like $65,000. That's all we had. And then Joe was cool enough to say, all right, I'll throw in a little more since you got Lynn Shea, you know, because Mark, the DP that I contacted, he had done a movie with Lynn before. And he's like, well, I can't promise you, bro. I was like, all right, well, I'll just write her a nice letter. And I wrote her a letter. She loved the letter, got back to me, talked to me a couple of times, and she agreed to read the script. She read it, liked the part, and agreed to do it. And I was like, hey, this is a low, ultra low budget movie. I was like, it ain't going to be like what you're used to. I was like, we are doing this. Half of my crew had never done any kind of film work ever in their life.
Wow.
We had a crew of Chris One-Liner, who was the AD, and Strange Bird, Adam, and that was it. And this Mel was there a couple of days. But we had three people doing all of our lights for the first 2 weeks. And we shot for 14 days. We lost a day and a half for a specific reason. I don't want to get into that. Drama. But so we got it all done. We missed a couple of scenes, so we had to get everybody back a couple of weeks later. So we shot the final bit, and then we had to get it edited, obviously. And at this point, I was cutting clips with this other kid in Volk, Portland, and I was planning to go to AFM. That was 2018, so I was taking clips of the film to AFM so I could help, you know, kind of try to market my film, try to get people to look at it. So it was getting edited a little bit at that point, but that kid, we had to rehire a different editor. That's a whole different story.
Mm-hmm.
you know, so we had to do that. And I got the clips to, I talked to Gravitas, offered me a deal. IAN offered me a deal. Lebowski and Shane, they took me out to dinner and offered me a deal. I mean, everybody, and I had minimum MGs from 40,000 to about 10. And I was going to take the 40. I think that was... That was my friend Gianni. He had some friend of his who was at the market who liked, he's like, well, look, we can make this back. He said that we can make this money back because the, you know, just the stars. I was like, cool. So I then at that point, I got contacted by Phoenix, you know, after
So who are we talking about? So for people who don't know, who's the company you're talking about?
Phoenix Worldwide Entertainment is the company that I made the deal with.
Okay.
And what happened was they approached me after AFM. And I said, hey, look, this is the situation. I've got these offers. I was like, so, and this is the best one. And they're like, oh, you don't want to go to that company, blah, blah, blah. Well, here, this is what we'll offer. They sent me a contract. I thought it was kind of fishy. So I sent it to my buddy. He works at an agency. He's not, I don't have an agent or anything, but I sent it to him. That's why I wish I had an agent. But I sent it to him. And he's like, all right. He said, yeah, you need to take this out, fix this. And he did all that. I sent it back to them. They approved it, signed it, sent it back to me. And I signed it. And the whole deal is, as you know, with a contract for a sales agent, who is getting it to distributors, there's a set of deliverables that you have to have.
All right, so hold on for 1 second. Okay, so Phoenix Worldwide is a sales agent, not a distributor?
They're both.
They're both. Okay, so they dance in both and both things. Okay, great. And they're based in the UK, if I'm not mistaken, correct?
Yeah, they have addresses here for some reason, which I've noticed too. Like the one of the information things I have has a Arizona address. And then there's another. Was it Maryland or Delaware?
Of course, yeah, that would be for local taxes. So, yeah, that's why they're in those setup. But generally, they're probably just PO boxes or something like that. We'll be right back after a word from our sponsor. And now back to the show. general, but they are a UK based company, correct?
Yes. Yes.
Okay.
Yes, and they handle everything. They handle, you know, all kinds of films.
Okay, great. So continue. So they asked them for deliverables.
Right.
And what was their deal? What was the deal they offered? By $100,000?
$100,000 on acceptance of deliverables. Within 3 days of accepting deliverables, we get $100,000 deposited in our bank.
Okay, great. And then also, what was the term of – do you remember the term? Meaning like is it 5 years? Is it 10 year? Is there a marketing cap, anything like that?
It was $25,000 marketing cap. That was supposed to come after the fact, after we got our MG. What they said.
Sure.
$25,000 marketing cap. I did most of the marketing. They did a couple of posters, which is great, but I was the one just all over the place.
The MG, I'm just reviewing this. It was a 5 year deal or 7 year deal, $25,000 marketing cap. And you were supposed to get $100,000 MG, and your budget for the film was how much?
It was about 97 plus post, and I had to sell my truck for post because we kept having to do more deliverables, and I had to get rid of one editor, so we basically had to start fresh again.
Okay,
was a nightmare.
All right, so let's go into the deliverables real quick.
Okay. Yep.
So
I got all the deliverables done, put them on a USB, got their information, Pinewood Studios in the UK, delivered it to the FedEx where they told us the address they told us to. I got confirmation it was there. Then all of a sudden, 3 or 4 days later, I'm, hey guys, have you got the drive yet? They're like, well, no, it's at FedEx, which was 5 miles from Pinewood Studios. And they're like, it's over there at the FedEx. They haven't delivered it yet. I was like, yeah, I know. I've talked to FedEx International like 7 times. They're saying that you guys need to give them some tax number that you didn't give them so they can give you the package. I was like, I just need one of you guys on your way to work or the way home, stop by, just pick up the 2 months passed. They never picked it up.
Christ.
And at that point, that's when I had sold my truck, and actually a couple of friends I'd taken loans from to pay for the QC, for a little extra editing, some music stuff we needed to pay for, all this extra stuff. I was borrowing money because I was under the assurance that I'd be able to pay everybody back. So now I look like an asshole.
No, it's okay. So what was the final cost of all the deliverables for you out of pocket?
About 14 after the BS. It should have been $8,000 or $9,000 max.
But it was about $14,000 cash out of your pocket. And you were saying, well, sure, I'll pay it because I have a guarantee of $100,000 going into my bank account. Why wouldn't I pay it so I can get this thing up and running and let's go? Okay. So 2 months pass. They still haven't picked up the thing, which of course, by the way, is delaying their $100,000 payment.
Oh, of course.
Yeah.
Of course. And so what ended up happening is we had to resend another drive and also hook them all up, everybody at Pinewood who worked for them, on a Dropbox file and upload all our deliverables on a separate Dropbox file on top of the USB. Then that took, for some reason, that still took forever for them to look at. And, you know, then Rachel, I guess one of the employees there, got back and said, yep, this looks all great. Everything's good to go. I went, great. And then, as you know now, we went back and forth. That was in October. So the first one was in July. Second was and what's funny, not funny, but in July, I was super horribly sick. August is when I got my cancer. I got stage 4 colon cancer with Mets and lungs, liver, and kidneys. And I'm doing amazing. I was supposed to be dead last Christmas. And I think I was going to die because they knew I had cancer as soon as they got that draft. Because I was horrible. Did you go back and look at my videos from that time? I'm about 60 pounds heavier. I lost weight, boom, like that, you know. But my doctor told me I was going to be dead, you know, and I did infusions, you know, for a while. Anyway, so there were situations that came up during that time, too. I was like, guys, I'm going through some really horrible stuff here, man. I was like, I need to be able to pay for meds. I have to set up insurance. I don't have that yet. I don't have a place to live up here yet. I was like, I just moved out of one house because I was planning on going like a 3-month hike. That's my plan. I started up at Mountain Hood. I was going to hike south. Mm-hmm. And just the world fell apart out of nowhere. You know, I'd been sick, I guess, for a long time. I made the whole movie with stage 4 cancer and didn't know I made a movie, you know, while I was sick. So, yeah, put up a lot of that fun stuff. I was begging them, and I have emails and messages that say, dude, we will definitely send you something to help with that. Then we'll work out this other stuff. And that happened 5, 6, 7, 8, 9 times. My power's been turned off twice. I can show you my I think my bank account has $7 or $8 in it right now. I live on because of this. I live, you know, because I know I seem pretty hyper and active, and I am. You know, because like I said, I try to take care of myself, but I do 10 minutes of yard work. I'm laying down because I'm so winded, and I'm trying to build that back up, and I'm doing really good. But there's, you know, every problem I've had on top of the stress of dealing with cancer, dealing with not being paid, I'm dealing with my buddy Joe who put all his money into it. I'm dealing with another buddy, Scott, who just handed me $6,000 just because he's an awesome human being. You know, I paid him back three out of the first because I was like, dude, I tried to pay as many people back as I could right away. And I left us with nothing again. You know, it's like I wrote a script. I got paid a little bit for that because Joe's awesome. You know, he took care of me on that. But I, basically 2.5 years of work, I got nothing. These assholes had their name above my film. Phoenix Worldwide Entertainment presents above my name.
All right. Okay. So let's take it back for a second. All right. So now they have been pushing and pushing and pushing for you to get you money, any sort of money whatsoever. They've been like, oh, it's coming. And you've already delivered. So you've now abided by the agreement. You've delivered it. They've approved those deliverables. And now you're waiting for their part of the MG, which is what they're supposed to pay, according to the contract. So it's now been how many months since the moment you delivered to the point where they – well, it's actually up to now.
Today? Today?
Right, yeah. So it's still that – a year.
A little over a year.
So a little over a year, and they still haven't paid you the MG that they promised you according to the agreement. Okay. So I just want everybody to understand that, everyone listening – just because it's on paper doesn't an agreement doesn't mean 100% that they're going to do it. You got to be careful about who you're walking into these deals with because you just don't know what the scenario is. And a lot of times a distributor might have the best intentions of the world, but something like COVID hits and all their money dries up and now they're screwed. So there's other, which I'm not saying that's this case, but it's just the world. It's just business. It happens in every business, but this is a different scenario. Okay, so they haven't given you any money, and they're just constantly just kind of gaslighting you. It's all coming. All right, so what's the next? So do you go after what happens to your movie? Because your movie gets released, right?
Yeah, and I didn't know it had been sold. And anybody who knows anything about this business knows if you're a filmmaker, you deal with sales agents and distributors, and they are both supposed to come to you and say, hey, this is a situation. We have somebody in the territory that wants to buy your film. Would you agree to this? Would you sign this so we can sell it, so we can get paid, and you can get paid? And then the filmmaker says, yes or no. That never happened. What happened was Lynn Shea got a hold of me and said, hey, congratulations. I hear they're doing a screening of your movie in L.A. at that little, you know, at the Cinema Cleopatra, does all the screenings at. I was like, wait, what? And so then then me and DJ got on the phone. We're like, wait, you sold the movie? Who'd you sell it to? And then we found out it was sold through Cleopatra. And then we were trying to get out a receipt. They're like, hey, man, let us know.
So no, real quick, Cleopatra. So because people, I want to make sure everyone keeps stays with the story. So Cleopatra is another distributor who purchased the rights to your film from Phoenix Entertainment Worldwide.
Phoenix Worldwide Entertainment.
Yes,
they're a Los Angeles based. They're great, and I want to say this too to make sure everyone understands. Cleopatra Entertainment, Tim, those guys, they've been awesome to me. This is not their fault. What they did, they're business people. They were offered a product. They paid the price for the product, and they put the product out. The people who are fucking me are the people who kept 30% of my money. And on top of that, another almost 80 grand. So,
By the way, what was the deal? That was the one thing I forgot to ask you about the deal. What was their percentage? It's not 30%. Was it a 70-30?
I'd have to look at that contract again. I think it was 10% or 5%. Honest to God, I have to look at that front page again. I don't have it in front of me.
Okay. But it wasn't 30%.
No, God, no. What's what I'm saying? DJ, my buddy DJ, he was helps me with this kind of stuff. He's trying to get the money from them too. He's like, that's ludicrous. He said, they should have kept $2,000, $3,000 max. Max. He said, all they did was sign a paper. They ain't done anything, And he said, they didn't even tell you they did the deal. Literally, I had to find out later and then beg and plead. And I got to the point, and I'm going to be honest with you here, brother. I was pleasant for a time. And I've used very, very, very choice words and emails to these people. And I have no problem saying that. I'll admit it. I'm a nice guy. I'm a loving, good human being. But if you step on me, I'm going to step back, and it's not right. And I own up to anything bad I ever said, anything vulgar I ever said in an email, because I'd had it. You get to a point and you snap, man. Right. And these people still don't care. And I snap because they started just ignoring the emails. They wouldn't even respond. I haven't heard from Michael Cohen in probably 8 or 9 months.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, of course.
Just blocked us all.
All right. So now your film has been purchased by Cleopatra Entertainment, and they release it. They release it, and from what you discovered, by the way, you had to find out outside of these people. So all the information that you're getting about what Cleopatra has done is from Cleopatra themselves or other people that you've gotten this information from, but not from Phoenix.
Not
okay. Of course. So they purchased, from what you've told me, they purchased English speaking rights.
Well, Phoenix Worldwide purchased Universal rights.
Correct. But then,
what I was told was they purchased domestic rights. But then what I found out later was that supposedly purchased all English speaking territories, which is a bunch of crap. And I had no idea about that. I wouldn't agree to something like that. Because that's markets that you can make more money off of, man. That's
of course, it's huge. That's huge markets that you're just giving away. So, all right, and do you mind saying how much they paid for that, those rights? We'll be right back after a word from our sponsor. And now back to the show.
Nothing. Well, no,
Cleopatra. No.
They paid 20. It was supposed to be 35,000 total. That's what they gave those guys. And then they sent us only 22.5 without telling us how much the deal was for. I never even heard what the deal was for. I just knew we were getting paid. We had to argue back and forth to get that.
So Phoenix did send you 22.5 off of this deal, but yes. They still have never paid you any of the MG at all.
Nope. And that took months and months and months and months too. That was a battle.
It wasn't like a magical check that showed up. You actually had to fight for that.
Over and over, phone, bank. The bank they used denied they sent the transfer. I kept asking for a tracking of her confirmation, info. They wouldn't talk to me. We don't have that.
So you discovered, so I just want to create the timelines for filmmakers listening. You find out from Lin Shaye, who, by the way, if everyone doesn't know who Lin Shaye is, can you tell them what Lin Shaye's been in? Besides everything?
Something About Mary. I mean, every other movie, Kingpin, Jesus, you know?
Yeah, she's been in 1,000 things. All right, yeah. So she's a very well-known actress. Lin Shaye calls you and says, hey, congratulations. So then because of that information, then you reach out to Cleopatra, and they're cool with you about it, and they start giving you all this information. Then you reach out to Phoenix and going, hey, where's my money? And now from that process of the phone call about Cleopatra to the point where you got your 22.5, how long did that take?
Months.
Months. And it was just hounding and beating up and emails and calls and just obscene amounts of time.
And being told that I was a bad person for getting mad at them for doing this and stuff like that. And that I was wrong for saying they're stealing my money and this and that. They told me I was a bad person more than once for saying that.
Wow.
That's why. This man, I can't deal with this anymore. I'm not gonna be their stepper boy, brother. And people need to know, and people will find out. So, but yeah,
you're the bad person for asking for the money that you're owed, in addition to the money that the $100,000 that they never gave. So they've reneged on their agreement with you, or they just never paid you, and then they're upset with you because then you call them out on a deal that they sold your movie and never told you about it, which is also, I'm assuming, part of your agreement that you're told when something is sold, or at least even told that you're going to be sold, or should I sell it?
Yep.
Oh my God. Okay. All right. So you get the 22.5 and then you're still fighting to get that. And that took, so you got 22.5. Great. Fantastic. It's some money. Fantastic. And I'm sure when they sent you that check, they're like, are you happy now?
No, Roby actually put in one of the emails, this is the end of this whole thing, or something like that. I was like, no, it's not.
This is the end of this whole thing. So they've never – did you keep bringing up the $100,000 they owed you?
All the time. I sent him emails with the contract in it.
and they what do they do? What do they say?
For it completely. They don't say anything. Nothing. Zero. Emmanuel, he gets back to me every now and then because – they're all blaming each other at this point. And that's the truth. Michael's blaming. He's blaming them. This guy says he doesn't work at the company anymore. This guy said they made the deal without him. This guy, it's a bunch of bullshit con, man. Dude. That's all they are, you know?
Wow. And yeah. I also want to clarify something. Just so everybody is aware, I did a little research on Michael and Phoenix and these guys. Can you tell the story? From what I saw, my research, they had issues with Mel Gibson, correct?
Yes. Yeah,
so, can you tell that story? Yeah.
What I know, all I know is I found that out later. I did research because I was getting pissed and I started finding stuff about the guy and the other guy. But it was mainly, it was some kind of stealth something. It was some film company that they put together and they raised millions of dollars from different investors to make a movie called Mary Magdalene. And what I gathered from that was that the movie was never made. Mel Gibson had never agreed to be involved in the movie. He didn't even know anything about it. And they were just pulling in lots of money. Then Cohen supposedly wasn't involved. But I see a court case where he was banned from doing business in the UK for a decade or something like that. And he's doing this deal. So maybe he's breaking the law and he doesn't know it.
So there's definitely some smoke here. There's definitely some smoke here. Okay, so all right, so now where so basically you're at the end of your rope. You're dealing with fighting for your life because you have cancer. And you're still struggling just to get paid the money that you're owed, essentially. Who owns, like, so now you can't get the rights back to your movie if you tried because Cleopatra has them, right?
They have to mess with it. We need to have a talk. All of us need to have a talk. I tried to call them a couple of times. Like, this, they know the deal. They've been included in a couple of the emails. They know the shady shit that's going on.
Mm-hmm.
So hopefully they will stand up for the right thing.
You mean Cleopatra you're talking about?
Yeah, I don't want to drag anybody else in. But I will tell you this, Cleopatra is a conglomerate or a part of Sony, which is the Orchard 1091.
Oh, yeah.
The first day when I posted that video bitching about Phoenix Worldwide,
yeah.
Guess who put a copyright claim on my fucking video? The Orchard.
Why?
Because that opening song, which is off iMovie, they put a copyright claim on me. How about that? What a bunch of dickbags.
Really?
It was right after I. And that's their company that owns, I don't know. Who knows, man? But,
Interesting. Interesting.
Somebody told me that I need to be, you shouldn't do this because it could hurt your career in the future. And I say this again, people who do this to people, I don't want to work with. I would never want to work with them. If you back people who do this kind of shit up, I don't want to work with you either. I mean, you know what I'm saying? Anybody who backs up the horrible stuff that these people did, it's not okay. And like you said earlier, it happens all the time and people just ignore it, right? Like it doesn't happen. And then most people can't fight it or they just give up after a few months. I ain't that guy, And that's the thing. They weren't expecting the fight. So
this is the problem I see in general. And I'll get on my soapbox for a second. The system is broken. The system needs to change. The system of distribution for films and compensating filmmakers, film producers, even other distributors in this chain, because a lot of times smaller distributors are in the same boat as filmmakers, because then they'll sell to a bigger distributor who screws them out, which in turn screws out the filmmaker. So there's multiple people in this chain. The system has not been designed to help you or to help they're just not built. The system has never was designed to help filmmakers since the days of Buster Keaton and Chaplin. I mean, that's just, how many times have we heard the term Hollywood accounting?
Right. Yeah.
I mean, how many times we've heard, the distributor screwed me. I mean, it's the equivalent of the casting couch. Until the Me Too movement, the casting couch was a punchline. Like, she got the part because she had to go on the casting couch, or he got the part because of this. It was part of business as usual until someone stood up and the movement stopped, so this kind of bullshit wouldn't happen anymore. And I feel that this has to happen in our side of the business, because in many ways I hate to use this term, but it's like a financial raping of filmmakers. I mean, look at the stuff you're going through and how much struggle that you went through to make your film. And you sold your car and you're almost homeless. You're dealing with cancer. You've taken loans out and by the way, your story is an insanely horrible, but I've heard other stories of people completely becoming desolate, like just gone, like moving, like 50-year-old men and women moving back home because they lost everything because they trusted a distributor or trusted an MG or trusted that this or whatever. It needs to change. And that's why I wanted to have you on the show to kind of share your story so people really get this, man, that this is not BS, And I know you know this as well as from what I did last year with Distribber when I broke that story and what happened with that. And that's still going on. And I after the new year, there'll probably be some updates. I'll just leave it at that on that scenario. But this is wrong, man. This is absolutely wrong, and it needs to stop. And now, by the way, it's getting tougher for anybody to make money in the business. COVID has changed the whole game completely, and now the pressure is starting to be applied on this system that was broken before COVID. So now guess who's going to get screwed? All the filmmakers are going to get screwed more and more and more and more. And there's going to be more more companies that are going to do this kind of these kind of shenanigans because either they have to or because they want to, you know? And we'll be right back after a word from our sponsor. And now back to the show.
And again, pre-COVID.
I'm sorry. And this all started pre-COVID. Yeah. And this all started pre-COVID. So, all right. Yeah. So, oh, by the way, I heard that your video caused a little bit of, you know, a little havoc. How many times has it been seen so far?
Like 600, I think, this morning.
600 times. It'll probably get a couple more hits by the time we're done.
Good.
But didn't somebody reach out to you from Phoenix?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. They reached out to me. They're like, hey, if you'll take those videos down, we'll give you $3,000 of our personal money right now to take all the videos down. And then we'll pay you the rest or whatever we can at 1st of December. No, first it was the 1st of the year. And I was like, no. They're like, okay, we'll give you $3,000 now, and we'll give you more the 1st of December. And I was like, no. I was like, what I would like, I don't want less. I don't want money as a favor. I don't want any – I don't want a freaking whatever. I want you to pay what's in the contract, what you owe us, what you took. That's it. None of this would be going on if they honored the contract, paid us what they owed us. I would be working on another film right now. I would not be doing this shit, you know, because I can't stop until this is handled. I can't move on until this is handled. They moved on. They're fucking other people and taking their money, you know.
Jesus.
I haven't moved on. And I've been – I'm glad you reached out because I've been doing this by myself. I had nobody to help me with this, you know.
And you know, if my platform can help – get the word out on stuff and educate filmmakers about what's going on in our industry. That's what I do. And again, when I heard your story, I wanted to shine a light on this because I just wanted to like, this is, come on, dude, the dude's got cancer. I mean, like, come on, man. Like just a little bit human,
yeah.
Just not a lot, just a little bit human. And even if we can't pay you the $100,000 the way we promised you, can we pay you 10 grand a month? Can we pay you 5 grand a month? Can we pay you something until we're paid off because we're having struggles? There's conversations, man. There's something that could be done if they truly cared about helping you.
Well, the problem was they sent me that confirmation from the bank that showed us what they paid us. And what the mistake they made was they included their balance. So I saw they had my money. They just opted to not pay it. Frost Bank. It shows their accounts like 67,000 or something, and they sent me 22, and they owed me 35. So it's there. It's on paper. It's right there that they fucked me, and it's like you had the money. You could have done the right thing right away, and you didn't. You know, just for the domestic deal. And I told them that at that point, I was like, if you can pay us for the domestic deal for now, we can work out the other later. You know, and no one wanted to do that. They just wanted to ignore everything and not pay anybody. You know, sick.
It is unfortunate that this continues to go on in our industry. And I want filmmakers to be really just aware that this is the way business is done a lot of times. Unfortunately, you know, predatory distributors are out there and doing business and hurting filmmakers on a daily basis all around the world. And you know, when this gets released, AFM is going around the corner. It comes out, you know, in Cannes, the Cannes film market, Berlin, MIPCOM, all of these, you know, there are these kind of predatory distributors out there doing this kind of business. So in all honesty, you know, when you sign a deal with a company overseas, it's really difficult for you to do anything. Am I wrong? So like, let's say you wanted to, you know, put a legal case against them. You got to hire an attorney in England to take them to court in England, right?
They do have no pay, no fee attorneys there. And what I've already been contacted, what they've done is an offense. And you can get prison time for what they've done in the UK. Mm-hmm. It's a prison terms offense. It's mm-hmm. it's not an if and or but. And these people contacted me like, yeah, you know, you might want to show them this and maybe they'll want to straighten out their accounts. But of course, that's when they called me too after I sent that. That's when they contacted me about the $3,000 after sending that little note. Yeah, that's when they contacted me.
$3,000. So they're trying to hush. It's like a payoff to basically to take it off, right? And they didn't disagree with you, right? In the email, they didn't say you're absolutely lying. We've paid you all our money. They didn't say that, did they?
Had nothing. They can't say it. Nope.
Right. They were just trying. They're just shutting you up. Yeah. They're trying to shut you up.
Yep. That's hard.
It's well, it's going to get harder. That's for sure. It's going to get harder. So let me ask you a question, man, because I'm just so upset about this, and I just holding back as much as I possibly can. What do you want to happen? So if they're going to see this and they're going to hear this, that I can promise you. What do you want to happen now?
At this point, I mean, I don't want to get all dark, but
No. Okay. Let's hold on. Let me rephrase the question, because I can see where this is going. What would you like to happen in regards to your film getting paid and moving on with your life?
Well, what I would like is Phoenix Worldwide to pay me. I told them they already took it off their site just recently again. They had it on the AFM page yesterday for sale. They had Get Gone on the AFM page for sale. And I sent them Jonathan Wolf and the rest of them email saying, get my damn movie off your page. Talking to Phoenix, I was like, Jonathan, this is my movie. They have no right. And they took it off like that. But I was like, they're still doing it. They're still doing it. But what I would like to happen is my buddy Joe to get his money. Me to get enough money to get my fucking truck back, for God's sakes. I don't care about the rest, man. I love doing this. So I don't like this part of it, but I love doing it. You know, I love the process. I love the people. And now I want to say that too real quick before anything else. The film Get Gone, man, my cast and crew, I love those people very much. We accomplished something that's really hard. You know, this has nothing to do with any of those people. So that's very important that everyone knows as well. Those people helped me accomplish a dream, and it means more to me than anything in the world. So I want to get that out too. You know, that's super important to me. So, but yeah, those other guys are dicks.
So you basically just at this point in the game want them to live up to their agreement, pay you the $100,000 that they owe you, and then at the end, and then go away, and just that's it. And they could go off and live, and you can go off and live.
I don't want them to go off and live successfully. I want them to never get to buy another film. I don't want them to ever get access to another project.
Okay.
You know, I have stepped in, have had people call me and ask my advice. And I said, don't make your decision based on what I tell you, but I'll tell them my story. And then they make their decision. And I have a feeling both of those films did not get picked up by Phoenix Worldwide Entertainment. And that will continue as well. You know, because I'm going to be honest, man. I'm not going to downtrod anybody. I'm not going to defame anybody. I'm not going to libel anybody. I'm going to be honest. Because that's bad enough. The truth's fucking horrible. So,
right. This is the truth. This is the truth based on the paperwork and the all the stuff that you have and the agreements and bank receipts and all the stuff that you've been laid out. And we're going to also be putting in the show notes an article that you're writing detailing a lot of this stuff with corroborating paperwork to back everything up that you're saying on our site as well. So if anybody wants that, I'll leave that in the show notes and I'll let you know where to go get that and read that information. Because, man, all right. So, yeah, because I understand a lot of people are going to probably start reaching out to you, and they're going to look up these guys, and your name is going to probably pop up. I've had that happen to me. I've had people look up a certain company and then my podcast shows up. Like, if you type in the word distributor, I was like the number one search. I was the number one and number two links on Google for distributor for the longest time, until the LA Times picked up the story, and then they became number one. But I was still a story about me dealing with distributor.
Yeah, you brought it to it, man. That's the thing. You got it out there, and that's the key to get it all. Yeah, fix these problems that are in this industry. We have to do this kind of thing, you know. And
we got to shine the light.
Yeah, none of us are perfect human beings. No one's perfect. We all make mistakes, and I understand that. And I'm going to forgive people if they say, "Hey, look, we fucked up. I'm sorry." Because I've had to do that. I was like, "Look, I made a mistake. I'm sorry." You can't get better. You can't fix problems. You can't move on unless you're able to do that. And they need to do it. To a lot of people, at least four or five people I know that they fucked over. So, you know, it's
I think the thing that a lot of these kind of distributors, or just generally predatory distributors in general, they like to live and work in the darkness. They don't want light shine on what they do. They don't want transparency. They don't want to see what's going on behind the scenes. They don't want you to see. They don't want information to get out there. They don't want to educate filmmakers about what cross collateralization is and not putting on a marketing cap and locking up your film for 10 years plus and you know not getting paid. They don't want people to know what this stuff is because that gives them power. So I feel it's my mission and my purpose to shine as much light on what they do in this business so everyone can see it, because that's the only way our business is going to be able to grow. Because at the end of the day, if we keep screwing over the content creators, we'll be right back after a word from our sponsor. And now back to the show. We're not going to be able to keep making content. And if we can't make content, there is no product. But, and by the way, a lot of newer generation, younger distribution companies are figuring that out. And they're not all about like the one-off, let me steal as much money as I can from these guys. And no, they're like, let's build a partnership. Let's make sure that you can do more of this, because the more product you can bring to me, the more money I can make, the more money you can make. And that's the way it should be. It shouldn't be this kind of predatory, let me screw you for as much as you can because there's another 20 films sitting behind you. And right now that might be the case, but I promise you, if you keep screwing this up and the information continues to get out there, I actually showed like my book to a few people who are outside the business, and I have 4 or 5 chapters on distribution and all the craziness. And they said, why would anyone do this? why would you get, this is not a business.
It's different.
We're carnival folk. Like I always say, we're carnies.
Absolutely. I'm a barker, that's for sure.
We are carnies.
I'm a magician carny.
But Michael, man, I do appreciate, by the way, how are you doing with your cancer, and what's the prognosis, if you all may asking?
If anybody here is watching this and actually interested, I can talk about this, it's cool. November 21st last year, I stopped taking chemo infusions because it almost killed me. I still have to do blood work and get stuff in this little thing here in my chest. But I stopped because it almost killed me. I almost died in the hospital. And I decided to switch over to CBDs and THCs. And I swear to God on my soul, since November, I stopped that. In January, I stopped the pill. So January of last year, I've had no pharmaceuticals at all. I've had only oils and tinctures. And my doctors are blown away. My tumors are all shrinking. I have my lungs are a little progression. Kidneys are doing great. The colon thing, it shrinks and grows, it shrinks and grows. But overall, man, I mean, I feel better than I felt in a couple of years. I'm just tired. I get winded. That's the worst. Sure. I'm always trying to work it up, you know, but I feel better than I did when I made Get Gone. You know, I got more energy. I feel better. You know, I'm thinner too. I'm eating like salads and fresh fruit, and no meat, no bread, no alcohol. You know, I'm like a monk. Who likes weed?
fair enough, man. Well, listen, I really wish you nothing but the best, man. And I'm glad you're doing better, and I hope that continues down that road. And I know the stress of this BS is probably not helped your condition in the least. But I do really wholeheartedly hope that you do continue to do well and get out of this and continue to live a very long and make a long, healthy life and make a lot more films that hopefully will generate revenue if you partner with the correct distribution partner on it, or self-distributor, however you want to eventually go down that road. I'm going to ask you a few questions that I ask all of my guests. What advice would you give a filmmaker trying to get into the business today? I'm afraid to ask.
Be honest. Don't bullshit. Don't spend your time in bars. I mean, you can socialize, but don't get a producer card and never produce shit. You can run your mouth all you want, but if you don't do the work, you're just running your mouth. I lived in Los Angeles for a long time. I ran into 100 people a day who had a producer card, never produced jack shit except a bus ticket home. If you're willing to suffer, you can do it. If you care, if you're honest with yourself about your art, you can do it. If you're just full of shit and you're trying to get a lottery ticket, don't waste your time, man, because you're wasting everybody else's time too. If you love the work, if you love creating, create.
Fair enough. Now, what is the lesson that took you the longest to learn, whether in the film business or in life?
Some of the people that you love and trust the most are the ones that will fuck you over the worst.
Oh, that's a rough one. That's a rough one.
I mean, I've got a lot of great lessons too, but I'm just saying, you know, that's it's a sad fact, you know. You know, fair. That includes people you bring into work on a film. It includes people at home. You know, whatever. You know, there's. It's just important. And I don't mean that in a negative way in any way.
I'm sorry. It is a fairly negative comment, I have to say.
Okay. And the meaning behind it, though, is that people that care about you a lot will give you information that will instill fear in you and make you not go after anything.
Correct. They do
that's
that.
That's the point about that. I'm not insulting people who love me because I love them too. But the point is that people that love you and trust you want to protect you. And they will stop you from being a filmmaker. My family, my entire life, I fought my family to my mom and dad were both dead. Up until 5 years ago, it was still a waste of time. All the stuff, even though I was making money and getting stuff done, to my mom, it's a huge waste of my life. And I had to fight, unfortunately, everybody my whole life. And it's the thing I love more than anything. And I'm not saying we all have things happen at the right times, you know? So it's that's the whole point. So yeah, I'm not insulting love and trust. I'm just saying the people who do love and trust you will protect you, and that can really hurt you sometimes. Instead of letting you, you know, you're a peacock. You gotta let him fly.
Let him fly. Let him fly. Peacock asses. I completely understand. I think every filmmaker who ever turned to their parents and said, "Hey, I want to go to film school. I'm going to be a filmmaker." 9 out of 10 times, that's generally not probably going to be a good conversation. My father and my parents didn't understand it. But I was lucky enough that they supported me, whether they believed it or not. They supported me. But it is. It is a conversation. I understand completely where you're coming from. Now, and three of your favorite films of all time, sir.
Color Purple, Shallow Grave,
oh, great.
And the Blues Brothers.
God, what the heck of a combination, man. I like that. That's a
Color Purple makes me cry to this day.
Yeah.
When Danny Glover's walking across that silhouette in the back and those kids are, dude, I start thinking about it. I almost want to cry because it's, the level of redemption that has to come, and then the preacher's daughter, her coming back to church. Holy Christ, man! There's so much about that movie that's so much beauty. Mm-hmm. You know, that's why I love it, because it's true. It's about pain. It's about life. It's about all the shit we go through. You know, mm-hmm. So yeah, Blues Brothers, obviously for a million reasons. Shallow Grave, most people don't know that movie. You know, it's Ewan McGregor way back in the day.
Oh, I remember. Yeah. Oh, what's his name? God. Oh God, 127 Hours. Danny Boyle.
Yeah.
Danny Boyle. Yeah. I love that. I was in film school when that came out. So of course, all of my classmates and I went to go see that. We're like, oh, this is amazing.
I don't want a roommate now.
Yeah, exactly. And then where can people find more videos? Cause I hear you're going to be posting more videos, and all the stuff that you're doing. Where can people find you, sir?
Well, if you go to my YouTube page, I guess we can maybe put a link in there, but it's Yeah. Okay. We'll do that. My website's, you know, getgonethemovie.com. You can check that out. You know, it's at Amazon. It's on Google Play. It's on iTunes. It's all over the place. If you look for Get Gone, you'll find it. It's a low budget movie. It's got horror. It's got comedy. There's not a lot of gore. There's no nudity. There's language. You know, it's fun. There's a lot of humor, because I'm a kind of a darkly humorous person. So some people don't know if they should laugh or not, but you should. You know.
Fair enough, man. Michael, man, again, I really thank you for your honesty, your bravery, for coming out publicly with this story, and just trying to shine a light on this side of the business, hopefully this story and this episode and everything that you're doing will continue to help filmmakers avoid a lot of the pitfalls that you've fallen into. And I applaud your bravery for not only this, but what you're dealing with on a personal level, man. So thank you so much for doing what you do, brother. I appreciate it.
Thank you for trying to help everybody, Alex. It means a lot. We need it.
I can't thank Michael enough for being on the show and sharing his journey, what he's going through personally and professionally with the tribe. And Michael, I know you felt that you were alone before, but you are no longer alone, my friend. This will get out to a lot of filmmakers, and I hope that it will help a lot of filmmakers and producers out in the world. Like I said before, guys, this needs to stop, and the only way it can stop is by people coming forward, by people telling their story, by people shining a light in the dark crevices of the nasty back alley crap that is done in the film distribution space. Like I said, there are many good film distributors, good sales agents, good reps out there trying to do business properly, trying to help filmmakers actually get paid
actually put their movies out into the marketplace and receive an ROI, receive a return on their blood, sweat, and tears on putting a movie together. But unfortunately, they are rare. And we as filmmakers have to be vigilant to not just hand over our hard work, our hundreds of thousands, if not millions of dollars of investment to a predatory distributor or a predatory sales agent. We'll be right back after a word from our sponsor. And now back to the show. Every time I hear a story like this, my heart breaks because I am trying so hard to get this information out into the ether, into the filmmaking community. I need your help to get this word out. Please share this podcast episode with as many filmmakers as you can. This information, this story needs to be heard, and I hope it galvanizes the community to stop being taken advantage of by predatory film distributors and sales agents. I will do my part and continue to shine a light on these parasites, but I am only one voice. I need the help of the tribe. I need you to get the word out on these podcasts, on these episodes, on these articles, on these videos that I'm posting. We've done a lot of good, and I know personally, I know that I've helped and you have helped so many filmmakers not to be taken advantage of, to avoid these ridiculous deals because of the information we are putting out there, but it is not enough. We as a community need to stand up and say enough is enough and change has to be made. And we do that with one deal at a time. We send a message to predatory film distributors that this is no longer allowed. And if you do screw us, we will talk. We will shine a light on predatory deals of 25 years or in perpetuity, deals that don't have marketing caps or abusive terms. It is the responsibility of the filmmaker to be able to see these con men for who they are and stop it before you sign on that dotted line. And the biggest weapon we have is education, to educate ourselves, to get the information out. And the second weapon we have is to talk, to discuss, to share information with other filmmakers, other producers, even other low-level distributors, smaller mom-and-pop distributors that I know of personally who get screwed over by bigger predatory distributors. It is a rampant systemic issue in our business, and it needs to stop. Now, if you want to read all about Michael Daniels' journey and all the details, look at the emails, look at the proof that he provided, the documents, and some other videos, please, I implore you to head over to the show notes at indiefilmhustle.com/413. And I've also included the audio from the YouTube video Michael posted that got me to call him in the first place. It is a very passionate video, and I wanted to include it in this podcast so you guys could hear it firsthand.
Hi, guys. All right, so it's almost 2 a.m. I got to get some stuff off my job. I'm so mad and so just, you know, we have dreams as human beings, and a lot of us work really hard to attain those dreams, especially when no one is there to believe in you and to help you ever, you know, and you struggle and you strive in your entire life and you do shit work for it and you suffer and you go without and you give up things and you bust your ass and you work so goddamn hard and you take shit from so many people who fucking need a punch in the face to accomplish something. And when you get it done, it's amazing. And then you try to get out there in the world, and then you have people who completely fuck you and who steal from you and who lie. Phoenix Worldwide Entertainment, Michael Cohen, Robbie Roby Moffitt, whatever the fuck, Emmanuel Morietti, those people were involved in this. They made a deal for my film. $100,000 minimum guarantee. To get that, we have to get deliverables done and accepted, which we did back in July, yet they wouldn't pick the goddamn USB up from the FedEx in UK, so it sat there for 2 months and then had to get reshipped. So anyway, they got the deliverables accepted via the contract, via agents, via law, via IFTA, the contract they signed when they bought the film. They were supposed to, within 3 days of acceptance, pay us the $100,000. They did not do it. They made excuses and excuses and excuses and excuses and excuses and excuses. I sold my fucking truck. I still don't have a truck. I still have stage 4 cancer. I've dealt with this every single day since July of last year, trying to get these motherfuckers from Phoenix Worldwide Entertainment to do the right thing. I get constant emails. Oh, my mama's sick. My dad's sick. I was in the hospital. My grandma's here. This is it. Oh, the bank won't transfer. We sent it, but it's not there. It's come. It's fuck you. Fuck you, Phoenix Worldwide. Fuck you, Michael Cohen. Fuck you, Robbie. Fuck you, Emmanuel. If you guys were in front of me, oh my God. Holy fucking shit. I've tried so long to keep this pub private as I can. No one will help me. IFTA won't fucking help me. I'm so mad. I'm so hurt. I put my trust, when I made this movie to start with, I put my love and my trust in every single person involved. And we made something. We got something done. And I got it out there. So all that, and I had stage 4 cancer while that was going on, while dealing with that, while dealing with this now, while trying to get paid for a year, over a year. They did a domestic deal with Cleopatra Entertainment, which is marvelous. I'm so happy my movie's out there and on Amazon and all these other places. The deal was for $35,000. They gave us $22,500. They didn't even tell us they did the deal. I found out about the deal later from someone else. I didn't even know they sold my movie. They were supposed to come to me and say, hey, this is the deal. Here's the contract. Do you accept this? And I say yes or no. And had I known at that point that it was all English-speaking territories, which is a bunch of horseshit that I never agreed to, I would have never agreed to that. Long story short, Phoenix Worldwide Entertainment, fuck you, Emmanuel, Michael, Roby, you guys are the worst of the worst. You know what you did. This is just the beginning. I'm going to do this every day. I will do everything I can to destroy your company. You broke my heart. I worked for a long time. I've been homeless for this. I've been without for this. I've gone hungry for this. I fought with my family for this. I've lost relationships for this. Fuck you. Fuck you. Fuck you. God damn it, man. Where's the help? For people like me, because they do it to other people. There are a lot of these fucking companies that do this kind of shit to people all the time. No one helps. What the fuck? Oh my God. Look them up. Michael Cohen, Phoenix Worldwide Entertainment. He fucked Mel Gibson over, or supposedly they say that didn't happen. It's still, you can find that. I found that out later. They're con men. They're scum. Do avoid them. Oh my God. It's what the fuck. I can't even sleep today. I'm so mad.
Thank you for listening, guys. Again, please share this episode with as many filmmakers as you can. As always, keep that hustle going. Keep that dream alive. Stay safe out there, and I'll talk to you soon.
Thanks for listening to the Indie Film Hustle Podcast at IndieFilmHustle.com. That's IndieFilmHustle.com.